Welcome. I am delighted. I'm here at Bitcoin Amsterdam conference, and I'm delighted to be sitting here with my friend. I can call you my friend.
Of course, right? You can. We are friends.
For the past 2 years, we've been in touch, and it's the first time we see each other in person. And I'm so excited for this
because
I've been waiting for this for a long time. So, Eva Vlaardingerbroek. Good enough.
All good. I know it's a horrible last name.
If you have lived under a rock, you don't know who Eva is, but you probably do. And she's a Dutch political commentator, activist, she's a lawyer, and I think most importantly, a dissident voice to totalitarianism, which is what I love the most about you, because you detect from miles away all the lies and the corruption, and you can spot them very quickly. You're very sharp, and I love that about you. And so thanks for being with me.
Thank you. Thank God that you're here.
Yeah.
I was worried about you. I was worried about your safety, especially with how brave you've been in the past few days. And I'm so sorry about what's happening to your country.
Yeah, and it's very strange for me that I'm here and I'm smiling and I'm talking to you, but now I feel safe and I feel at home. Because the whole day, like, I'm breaking down and I'm crying and I'm a mess. Like, I was on stage before and I spoke and it was okay because I came here to do my job because I committed and everything. But this is not normal time for me.
No, and, of course not.
And so, you know, just knowing that I can allow myself to be vulnerable and to be open and to be with people like you that make me feel safe and at home is just relaxing. But this is crazy, so thank you for the support that
crazy,
I've been getting.
Crazy, and you've been extraordinarily brave, like, straight off the bat. So you're not just dealing with your country being at war, but also that you're in a way in the front lines yourself, you know?
I am, and we both move in parallel paths in recent years. And I love the important work you do, and we both have not been afraid to speak our minds and to voice what we think, even if it had a really big price. And that's the first thing I want us to talk about, because there are many people who are looking at what we're doing. They may be admiring it, or they may be inspired by it, because it gives them the courage to act in a way similarly in their lives. They don't necessarily have to be like us, completely vocal, but still gives them the courage to stand for themselves. And at the same time, most people, I would say, are afraid of doing that because they know it always comes with a certain price.
Yes.
And so I'm experiencing that price at the moment. I've experienced it during COVID. I experienced it when I spoke about other things. And I know you've experienced it as well. You're relatively young. You're very well outspoken. You are Dutch, but your English is perfect, so you've been doing a lot of work in English around the world, and your profile is high, so people know you, and they pay attention to you, and I'm sure the government pays attention to you as well. So that's my first question for you. How do you handle the arrows that are being shot at you when you do come out with your morals, your values, your stand that may not be the most popular? It may be not common, and it may be dissident to what the mainstream narrative is, but you feel like it's from your gut. You just feel like you have to say it.
Yeah, you have to say it anyway. Ooh, how do you deal with that? Well, I understand why people are afraid, because I'm not gonna sugarcoat it, right? We both know, like you said, this comes with a price.
Yeah.
Being a dissident voice nowadays, and I'm not talking, you know, like being a little bit right or left from center, but being a dissident voice to the globalist powers right now, that's what puts you at risk. You know, it's true. And it's true that comes with a price. It comes with social exclusion, because other people, even if they might agree with you in your direct surroundings, they're afraid of what it means to be friends with somebody who is considered a dangerous person or a controversial person, or they really genuinely disagree with you and they don't want to associate with you. It's true. I mean, I've lost many friends over the years, and I can't sugarcoat that and hide that if I tell people, you know, like that they should stand up, because I don't want to lie to them. Yes, it is true that you will face consequences, but as you said, there is, in my soul at least, and in my gut, there is this force that's more powerful than wanting to be liked.
And when you see people that have already been red-pilled or awakened to a specific story or agenda, and they get it, they get the lie there, and they discover the truth, how do you see their reactions when another agenda presents itself or another story comes in, and then they have to face with that, but they pull away and they don't find the same level of sophistication, understanding, adapting the same view from the first story to the next story? How do you see that unfold?
I mean, I think, you know, we've all seen the memes and the jokes about the current thing, right? There's always a new current thing. It was COVID, then it was Ukraine, then it was, we're going digital identity, CBDCs. You know, there's always a new thing. And now also with obviously the Israel-Palestine war, people jump to conclusions fast when the fire becomes hotter, right?
Yeah.
When it's like, they're really close to the fire, and the consequences of having a position that is maybe, again, regarded as dissident or not, there's no safety in numbers. And I think everybody has their limits, you know? And that's something that I've noticed over and over again. So I've seen people who were in the refugee crisis, you know, were against mass migration and dared to step up there, even though they were called a racist. I've seen those people be unwilling to stand up against government tyranny during COVID. Some of them were, though. But then when Ukraine and Russia hit, they were unwilling to say, hey, there's something really wrong here.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's what we keep on seeing. It's like the dissident train or the dissident bandwagon, I guess, that some people are brave enough to jump onto. Some of them will fall off along the road. And I think that for, you know, I don't want to sit here and say that that will never happen to me. You know, I'm also not perfect. Maybe you will be deceived sometimes. Maybe you will. The risks are going to outweigh the benefits. I can imagine that for people with children, for example, like there are different interests, you know, that they have to consider. But right now, currently, I just turned 27. I'm unmarried. I don't have any kids. I basically have just me to care for. And my family, thank God, is completely on board with me. So I'm relatively free in that sense to go against the grain. And I've also experienced what the consequences are from a very young age. So I've been used to it, I guess.
Really?
You know?
Why? In your childhood?
Well, I mean, I started off with the debate club, you know, in high school, which is not it doesn't make you necessarily popular to be part of a nerdy debate club, right? And just in and of itself, doing something like that, but then also starting to grow my political awareness and my political opinions, always leaning somewhat right wing.
Yes.
Just naturally, I guess, has caused me trouble even with school teachers, you know? So when it then happened in university, maybe I was disappointed, but not super surprised. And then when it happens at university with your professors, but then with the government, it's like, oh, disappointed, but not surprised. It's like it happens with your friend, disappointed, not surprised.
And not surprised, yeah.
So I guess,
so you've been trained for that.
For a while. Yeah, and I think that's why things like COVID, you know, were and people were not following the mainstream narrative were branded as right wing. It's because a lot of right wingers who knew what it was like already to be branded or labeled as, a racist or a fascist or a Nazi, were like, oh, okay, that's that same spiel again. We know that. I'm not so sensitive to that.
We're immune to it.
We're known to be dissident, or we're used to be dissident, quote unquote, and they weren't so susceptible to it. But it's true that with every new thing that happens, some people will capitulate or will cave or will suddenly have a change of heart. And yeah, I think it's always important to be consistent in your thought pattern. So if you challenge authority in general and you have a general conception that the government is not to be trusted or certain people in a place of authority are not to be trusted.
Yes.
If you suddenly, with a new thing, find yourself on the side of those people, even though, you know, for the past 4, 5, 6 crises you haven't been, then maybe that should ring a little bit of an alarm bell.
A warning sign that should be noted.
Yeah.
It's a trigger for you to look in and ask yourself the tough questions. And I think that's where people drop off the wagon, like you said, because they're not willing to confront themselves and their egos about their consistency in terms of their morals and values and thought pattern, like you called it.
Which is understandable, right? I mean,
it's hard. It's hard.
The same thing happened a lot with people who got vaccinated, for example, who were like, okay, even if they changed their mind somewhat, they weren't able to go the full, full mile because, like, yeah, it must be super difficult. Like, the cognitive dissonance must be off the charts.
Yes.
If you know that you have complied with something, you've made a terrible mistake and something that you can't undo. It's very hard, you know, to then say I was wrong.
It's super hard. And I think that's what it requires is really humility.
Yes.
To say I was wrong or I was led to be wrong or I was manipulated.
Yeah.
And I take down my guard now and I admit it and I want to learn something from it. That takes immense courage. That's the courage that people talk to me and you about when they say, how do you do it? I'm just able to say I was wrong.
Yes.
Or I'm learning something new. I thought this, but now I know that. And I'm okay to say when I am wrong.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think it's just a Peterson quote from a few years ago where he said, well, why would you speak the truth? Because the consequences of not speaking the truth are always worse than the consequences of speaking the truth. And I think that that's true. Because you always have to live with your own conscience. And it's...
In a time of deceit, telling the truth is a revolutionary act.
Horrible, yeah.
Right?
There you go, there you go. Well, there are so many. And
yes.
I mean, 1984 is, as everyone says, no longer fiction. So I guess it's just right about time to start speaking the truth.
Exactly. All right, let me ask you my next question. We're at a Bitcoin Amsterdam conference. We forgot for a second. But you were just on stage on a session that was called Trust the Experts.
Yeah.
And you were talking about how people take authority and your journey, what we just mentioned, your journey with authority. And what I loved that you said on stage with regards to the Bitcoin community and the Bitcoiners, the different types of Bitcoiners that we see around. And you and I are quite similar in that sense because we both have adopted Bitcoin only recently. And we got it very fast because we come from a red pill background.
Yes.
And we get the whole shenanigan of, you know, that someone's against you and someone's trying to take something away from you,
yeah,
your rights or your money or whatever it
is. Not everybody has good intentions.
Yeah, and we got it very quickly. And so the path from red pill to orange pill is quite short and natural for us. But then you have people, and that's a type of people in the Bitcoin community. But then you mentioned that there's another type. Can you share what you said about that?
Yeah, well, I'll just give you some context because according to the organizers that I've spoken to, so the Bitcoin conference is organized by, there's an American faction and there is a Dutch faction, right? And well, the Dutch faction and also the Dutch press has been extremely opposed to me coming to speak.
Really?
Yes.
What were they saying?
They were, you know, like...
Formally or informally?
Like, no, the
publicly?
I mean, I'll say not the organization itself, although I think they had a little bit of difficulty giving true rebuttal to the people who were very critical of me. But like there was in the Dutch Bitcoin community, there were a lot of people who were very against me coming to speak here because I'm considered far right, right?
Wow.
And so it was even, you know, posts from like journalists saying, oh, fascism is now meeting Bitcoin, calling me a fascist,
no.
Which is so, I mean, I can't swear
I can't
probably on your podcast.
No,
but
yeah,
it's
you
such
can.
A
yeah,
fucking
you can.
Joke,
fuck
Brad.
That.
It's such a joke because it's like, you don't know what I stand for or you don't know what fascism means.
Of course.
Because like, I'm here.
You have nothing to do with fascism.
Well, I'm
it's
literally
not the definition.
Here to argue against centralized authority, against government mingling with your financial life. It's like, it's the complete opposite of what fascism propagates. So either you don't know me or you don't know what fascism means. But it's just like another term that's just slapped on me. And I'm used to that. But it was surprising for me to see that people within the Bitcoin sphere bought that narrative and repeated it and reiterated it with or weren't really able to like go against it. And I was like, that doesn't make any sense to me. Because to me, Bitcoiners are people that have freedom as the, you know, their highest value in life, freedom, sovereignty, autonomy and
property rights,
like exactly the things that I've been fighting for here with regards to the Dutch farmers being robbed of their land by the Dutch government. And
so
it's
how
just
do
like,
you don't see the alignment in
that? Yeah. How do you see me as like somebody who's controversial or opposed to your movement? Like I don't get it. So I was very surprised to see again that divide between like the European, especially the Dutch Bitcoiners, not all of them, thank God, but like quite a few who seem to be like politically either neutral or quite left leaning, quite like in the matrix, I would say, definitely blue pilled, who then also were for some reason orange pilled. And I was like, why? And I found that they were oftentimes just like crypto nerds, you know, just
crypto,
like tech nerds,
yeah,
who are like, we like the technology, but we don't vibe with your political stance. And I'm like, I don't get that, because the technology of Bitcoin, the more that I learn about it, like being someone who's new in this, I'm like, blockchain is not as efficient, not as fast, and not as cheap as other forms of online transacting. So it's like, why would you opt for that unless there is a reason that trumps, you know, that inconvenience,
an
which
upside.
Can only be a value like freedom. Like there must be a trade-off. There must be an upside.
The decentralization.
Right. And that, to me, the fact that for some Bitcoiners that is not apparent, I'm like, why are you even here then? You know, like I know that I'm a newbie to it, but I feel like I grasp the essence of Bitcoin, the OG Bitcoiners, you know, the freedom maximalists quite well. And it's surprising for me to see people who don't see that and still call themselves Bitcoiners and then are like, you know, foaming at the mouth at the fact that someone like me comes to speak here. So I called them out for it. I was like, you know, let's address the controversy.
Good on you. We should do that, because I think the Bitcoin community needs to understand that if they want to embrace more new adopters for Bitcoin, they have to take down their guard.
Yes.
And really look into themselves again.
Why
are you here?
Right.
And do you know Bitcoin really? But really, not just the tech side of it, not just the protocols,
yeah,
but the actual principles.
But you were so right. Like even like on the color wheel, right? The red pill to the orange pill, that's a small nuance. But
yeah,
going from blue to orange, that's the opposite of the color wheel.
Yes.
I mean, it, you know, even in that sense, it makes no sense to me that you would go from blue to orange. You
have a path to go there. Yeah,
yeah,
for sure. The farmers' movement, we got to talk about that. What drove it? What are the results so far, especially with the political status now with the new party that have been set up? I know that there was a success, but it's not yet clear. Give us like an update of...
Well, okay, so the whole farmers' protest, it's been going on for years, so that's important to know. It all started out with a lawsuit here. There was a court case. Some environmentalist activist group sued the Dutch government, and saying, well, you guys aren't adhering to the European standards to combat climate change, and you need to do more.
Yeah.
And especially with agriculture. So
yes,
you have the obligation, Dutch government, to basically either regulate the agricultural sector to death or get rid of it for at least 50%. And the courts, of course, said, yeah, activist organization, you're correct. So we're going to oblige the Dutch government to do this. And that kind of like makes it sound as if the Dutch government is like, oh, poor them, you know, they were just forced by the courts. I don't believe that for a second. I think that the Dutch government and these activist organizations and the judicial system are all working in tandem.
Together.
Yeah, because it's in the Dutch government's and the Dutch state's best interest to get rid of the farmers, because that means that they get the land. And that's exactly...
They can take over that property?
Right. That's exactly what has happened ever since that court case. It has moved further and further. And now we're at the point where the Dutch government about a year ago said, look, we're going to have to cut at least 30% of all cattle farms, which would result, by the way, in more than 50% of all Dutch farmers going completely out of business. And you're going to...
Again, the number?
We're going to cut 30% of the cattle farms. And if that happens, you know, farmers, obviously, you can't just cut 30% of their livestock and expect them to still exist, you
of
know,
course.
And still be financially
you kill them.
Profitable. So
you kill
that would result in more than 50% of them going out of business. And that sparked a new wave of protests, a very for Dutch standards, aggressive protests, you know, because we're definitely not people who go out to protest like the French do in general. It takes a lot for Dutch people to start resisting the government.
And it was impressive.
It was. And it got a lot of media attention, especially internationally. And
yes.
And my role
even
in
mainstream,
that,
they did not hide it.
They couldn't.
They couldn't.
It was too big. And that's like,
That's a win.
That's a win, right?
Dear.
That's one of the lessons that yes. I've really taken from this. Is if we become strong enough, if it becomes big enough, if it derails them enough, they can't ignore you. So it's such a hopeful message in that sense.
Love it.
Like you always just push through.
We need examples like that because it keeps our fire burning, you know?
Yeah, just like with the Canadian truckers
yes.
and with the Dutch protest or farmers protest. It was this, I think that's why an international audience, as big as it was interested in this story because it was a message of hope for people. It's like,
yes.
okay, we see the same patterns unfolding everywhere. We see the attacks on our private property. We see the attacks on our liberties and on our freedoms. And here is this small group of down-to-earth, you know, hardworking people that is making a fist and they're being successful.
Like, now, the Dutch farmers, do they see the connection between what the government is doing to them, to Agenda 21 and Agenda 2030? Do they get it?
I would say the majority does, but there's still a large minority that does not. And those are the ones that are going to capitulate, that are probably going to sell out their farms. Although it was hopeful to see the fight that the farmers put up, there was, in fact, a lot of division even within the Dutch farmers.
I'm sure.
Definitely between exactly the people who saw the bigger agenda and the people who didn't, the people who still trusted the government or who were
yes.
baffled by
yes,
it were like,
yes.
how is it possible that they would do this to us? You know, I'm like,
there's no way that they will be against us.
Yeah, no, I mean, they're literally trying to rob you of your land. So I think it's about time that you should wake up to the fact that they don't have your best interests at heart.
Wow.
But yeah, so those protests last summer, they were effective in the sense
yes.
that it woke the general population up. We had indeed a new party arise that is called BBB. It stands for Farmer Citizens Movement.
Mm-hmm.
In our last regional elections, they became the largest party, which was a good sign, not necessarily because I think that party necessarily is going to save us from the situation. I think they've catered towards the establishment too much. Personally, I don't subscribe to them.
Okay.
But the fact that a party that has the word farmer in it,
yes.
you know, was so, so hugely voted for, you know,
amazing.
That they became the largest party in the regional elections is a good sign.
Yeah, it goes to show the impact,
yes,
right?
Yes.
Of the influence of resistance, whether this is the right solution, the right path to get to solve this or not, probably not. I'm with you. I don't think the political route is what's going to solve the problem, but at least it's a good step in raising the awareness globally
yes.
to the Agenda 2030 or the wider agenda of
sure.
taking property away from people and ruling, again, another step in ruling over the population.
Yeah.
So, and I just want to say that you're a champion. What you did during that time was superb.
Thank you.
It was amazing. Okay, CBDC. And where we're heading, in your view, with the technocratic New World Order.
hell on Earth. I mean, look, as I said on stage, the European Commission has a new gathering in 3 days from now about the digital euro.
Christine Lagarde said a few months ago that October time now is when they're going to announce that this is actually happening. And that's where she had... Did you see that funny video where they pranked her?
Which one was that?
The two podcasters that pretended to be
yeah.
Ukrainian Zelensky. It's like Zelensky's having a call with her, asking her all these questions about CBDC and control. And she's like letting out all this information.
Yeah, she said the quiet part out loud.
She's fucking stupid. Anyway, so she told in that conversation how they're going to announce it in October. She said there will be control up to 400 euros. Maybe there won't be much, but then more than 400 euros, we will control people's money.
Of course, yeah. No surprise there. I mean, the Dutch government is now making a law that will regulate and monitor every transaction over 100 euros, regardless of whether it's CBDC or just like any type of
normal online banking,
you know? So it's they're so clear about what they want to do. And that's what I said also on stage. It's like they flip the presumption of innocence around into a presumption of guilt.
I want you to say it again. Yeah.
Yeah. So we, as ordinary citizens, have to prove to the state that we are not money launderers, that we are not criminals, and we have to defend our rights, you know, which you shouldn't have to be defending your rights actively. You should be able to exercise them. That's why they're rights.
Yes, and not privileges.
And not privileges. Like, I want to use cash money. Okay, I don't want to pay by card, but I want to pay with cash. Nobody has to ask me why. You know, you don't, it's not like, oh, do you have something to hide? You know, that narrative, that's the standard now.
Yes.
That's exactly the way that our government is trying to pressure people. And I feel like blackmail people into accepting this, because most people are like, well, I have nothing to hide, because they genuinely don't, you know? And then but they don't have maybe the rhetorics or the narrative at ready
distinguished
to counter that, mm-hmm. because it's so, you're immediately put with your back against the wall. It's like, oh, you're a criminal, prove me you're not, you know? It's like, oh, whoa, I don't know how to prove that I'm not a criminal. Like, I'm just not. And the fact that that's happening right now already, you know, with normal online transactions, once CBDCs are in place, it's like, good luck getting back from that. You know, I don't see how once you've crossed that Rubicon, you can still resist it.
Yeah, so we need to make some noise about it, and people need to resist it. In the U.S., they're doing quite a good job in some of the states to resist it, like in Florida, South Dakota, Indiana, Texas. And there is now a federal bill on the table to try and ban CBDC completely from the Republican Party. But other than that, around the world, I see very little resistance. People are not even aware.
Yeah.
And they're hiding it from the public completely. You won't hear any mainstream media outlet talking about CBDC.
No. And if they do, they call it just another form of digital money.
Yeah.
Which is such...
The digital euro, the digital shekel. Come on.
Yeah.
This is not just the digital euro.
It's not digital money. It's credit. It's credit that is given to you by the government that they can take away at any moment they wish so. And you know, of course they're going to say, no, we're never going to program it. You know, it will never be made dependent on your political opinions. Well, duh. Like, do you expect them to say that part out loud right now? No.
And please take me to the next step of, okay, there is CBDC. What else? Digital ID. Where else are they taking it?
So
what's their vision in your eyes?
The European Union has been extremely clear about what their vision was.
Okay.
Funnily enough, even when they spoke about digital identity years ago, in some of their documents, they mentioned vaccine passports as a precursor to digital identity. And then suddenly the pandemic hit. And
that
I was like, oh.
ID 2020? Is that the initiative you're talking about?
I think so, yeah.
ID 2020, I think it's called.
Yes. And it was like, okay, here now everybody needs to have digital vaccine passports with a QR code in order to take part in normal everyday life. And everybody, or almost everybody, I mean, here in the Netherlands, the vaccination count is 92%.
No. Really?
Yeah. Yeah. 92. I think 92% had at least one or two shots.
Unbelievable.
It's like, okay. And then all of those people had their digital QR codes. So what's the next step is that it's not just your vaccine data, of course, or your vaccination record. It's everything else. And why do we think that they are monitoring our carbon emissions right now?
Yes.
Because, well, you know, they're saying they're doing it to raise awareness. So, of course, nobody raises awareness for free. It's so that information can be used and that you can be, again, controlled and monitored and limited in your freedom. So once that digital identity is there, combined with central bank digital currencies, if I stand here at the bar and I want to order a beef, cheeseburger or a steak or whatnot, and I do that only with my central bank digital currencies because I have no other means of paying it, it immediately can register, oh, okay, this is Ava. She just ordered a burger that is so many carbon credits that we are going to detract from her account. And next time that I try to buy one and I've surpassed my limit, it's just CBDCs don't work today. because you've surpassed your limit.
Do you want to buy more, dear? Do you want to buy more credits?
Yeah.
And then they'll make money off it.
And then they'll make money off
of it. If they decide to allow
us. Yes. Yeah. Which is, again, you know, it's, we're going to walk straight into a two-tier society, just like we did with COVID. And this time it's going to be worse.
It's going to be worse. I agree with you. And for everyone that may think that something we said here is a conspiracy theory, you should go to the WEF website and look for personal carbon allowance, and you'll find the document that they have about personal carbon allowance that talks exactly about that. You are going to be monitored for every step, every transaction, every consumption habit you have, because it's all tied into the climate agenda.
They all speak about it super openly, you know.
Yeah. And it's done already in Brazil. There is a pilot for Bank C6, which is one of the banks of, it's one of the largest banks of Brazil. They already have that pilot in place. When my friend Simon Godek ordered food with his credit card, he was out of carbon credits.
You're kidding.
Yeah, he didn't even know that he had it on his app, on his banking app. And he got a call from the bank, and the lady told him, you just ran out of your carbon credits. You want to purchase more? And he said, what the fuck? What are you talking about? Yes. And she said, yeah, you can purchase more credits and buy more stuff with your credit card. And he said, is it mandatory? She said, for now, it's not.
For now.
For now, it's not. It's still a pilot. It is a pilot. There is a CBDC pilot happening in Brazil and in Australia and in Israel. And the Bank of International Settlements itself has a few pilot programs about the green agenda with CBDC.
I mean,
it exists. You can go and check on the BIS website.
I feel like if you have two functioning brain cells, you would know where this is going, right? It's like, do we really believe that here, for example, in the Netherlands, the largest banks already track our carbon emissions, right?
Yes.
And then I warned about it, and people are like, no, they're just doing that for awareness so that you know how much pollution you're contributing to. I'm like, you think that major corporations and banks do anything for free to raise awareness? Like, you must be like extraordinarily naive to believe that. But a lot of people do.
Yeah, they do.
A lot of people do.
Because they're so genius with their mind control and brainwashing that they essentially make you always feel that it's about you.
Yes.
And that you have the personal responsibility for all those bigger issues of the world.
Yeah.
And you want to be a good person, so you subscribe to it. And you're innocent. And you're manipulatable.
Yeah.
You are allowing them to manipulate you. So once you stop and say, hey, I love Gaia. I love this world. I love Earth. I love nature. And I want to support it. And I want trees and I want animals and I want to know plastic and I want to protect this place that I live in. That's great. But do you really have to pay a tax on your flight ticket or on your hamburger?
Yes.
Because of that, because you love Earth. Or are there other ways that you can exercise your love to this place that you live in?
The green agenda is anything but green also, you know.
Sinister.
It's so... With the farmers, it became so apparent to me, you know, just looking out at the Dutch landscape, seeing the cows graze with our windmills and our waters.
Yes.
And that's what they oppose. That's what they say causes climate change. And then you see there, this, like,
that's
dystopian world.
That's like being fully in life, embracing the resources of nature to harness them for your flourishing, right?
And we've done it for hundreds of years.
And no wonder that Netherlands is the second largest
exporter of agricultural products in the world.
Exactly.
And that is now suddenly the cause for a new problem like climate change. It doesn't make any sense. And then what do these people propose as the alternative? You know,
yes,
they say that the farming and the cows and all of that, that's the problem. And then their world is filled with these wind turbines and solar panels and fake meats and synthetic stuff. And you're like, okay, so that dystopian gray, like manufactured world of yours, that is more green. That is more like that's closer to nature, to who we are, and that's better for the world than those poor cows standing there in the grass. Like, like, with your own eyes, you know, if you look at that, you know that that's a lie. Everybody knows deep down that's a lie.
And they're too afraid? You think they're too afraid to do something about it?
I think, you know, the title of our panel was Trust the Experts, obviously, ironically. But I think that that's what they bank on, is people's humility in a way. Not just their fear, but also their humility, and that they are not experts, and they are constantly manipulated by having people tell them, well, you don't know this, you know, you don't understand how the virus works, you don't understand how climate change works. Here are these people who went to school for it for decades, and they are now telling us that this is what we need to do, and you just have to listen. If you don't listen, you're not just an idiot, you're also killing grandma or the entire planet. And then, you know, like, both their humility and sort of that fear of not exactly knowing how to vocalize what they feel, plus the moralist sort of blackmail and the, you know, the pressure that is on it. I think it's the deadliest combination in the world. And people are just, okay, yeah, I'll follow the experts.
And then they trust the experts. So how would you then connect Bitcoin to this dystopian future that we're heading towards?
Well, I mean, we've noticed that people who have gone against the grain have had their bank accounts shut.
Yes.
You know, the Canadian truckers, prime example of that. Nigel Farage was here a year ago. His bank account's now been frozen. That's something that is going to happen to more people than just Nigel Farage or the Canadian truckers, you know? And so what are you going to do when that happens? Right now, I'll be totally honest about that. If they freeze my bank account, I am screwed.
Yeah, you're fucked. I'm fucked too. Yeah.
I'm like absolutely screwed.
I'm in the process of moving my wealth.
Right. So that's the thing. Like, we need to be smart about this.
Yes.
You know, you can't afford anymore to lean back and think, oh, maybe it won't happen. Because the moment it does, it's like, what are you going to do? You know, so I think it's important to risk manage that. And that's why I've been really interested in Bitcoin, because people told me, look, this is a real alternative. And I had my worries about that at first. I was like, yeah, but what if they just ban Bitcoin? What about if you can't use Bitcoin anywhere? You know, like, how does that work? I still have these questions to a certain degree, but I do understand that.
You know, China banned Bitcoin, and it's one of the largest countries in terms of adoption of Bitcoin still.
See, so those are good answers, and
it's illegal, but they can't do much about it.
Right, right, and I think we all have to get smarter about it. So, if things that are they make everything illegal that is good anyway. So, you know, or they potentially will. I remember during the pandemic, I traveled to Vienna for a COVID protest.
Yeah.
It was illegal for me as an unvaccinated woman to be out on the streets.
Oh my
and
God.
Even to breathe, you know? So I'm like, I'm far past that point. I'm totally on the lex injusta non est lex, and you know, an unjust law is not a law. That's where I am. And obviously I'm not calling to do anything illegal, because if I would, you know, next thing you know, you get slapped with incitement in this damn country. So.
Yes. So you're being careful.
Yeah. Good. You have to be careful, but you have to be
guys,
wise.
Guys, seriously, look into Bitcoin. I mean, that people need to start learning more about it. Now is time. And what's your message to drive people to action and give them some hope for this crazy shenanigan that we're experiencing around the world? Do you have any words of hope?
Where do
you find your hope? I know, but you tell me, where do you find your hope?
So I find my hope. Look, I was on a panel with someone who was like, look, God's dead, you know.
I'm like, oh, God's dead. And Eva's like, no.
Yeah, I'm like, no, no, he's not. He is very much alive. He resurrected from the dead. And I feel a moral obligation in this life, not, you know, not just to bank on the idea. I think it's important that I do good deeds also in this life in order to even get to heaven, as a Catholic. But it's, if you know that there is an objective higher truth, then yeah, it becomes easier maybe to suffer discomfort in this life.
Yes.
And I don't know what else would do that for people. You know, like, I don't know, because most people, if you don't believe in something bigger, greater than you, even if you just say, well, I believe in interpersonal relationships and I want to do something
higher
good.
Higher purpose. Some kind of higher purpose.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you need something, because even like the interpersonal relationships, that was abused thoroughly by the government during COVID. They said like, this is the right thing to do for your neighbor.
Yes.
You know, like you have to protect others. It was maybe the main reason why people got vaccinated was because they were told that you would protect others. So even your love for other humans might not be enough, you know, to really have a moral, I would say, yeah, instrument or weapon even against the evils of this world. And if you believe that evil exists, like even if you're not religious, but you do see that evil exists.
Yes.
Then the hope is in the fact that true good also exists. And that is what it has been for me. So, yeah.
True good does exist.
It does. Yeah. The truth exists and it is worth fighting for. It's worth fighting for, and not just now and or because it will get you away into heaven, but because it is the truth. And like Peterson said, the consequences of not speaking the truth are always worse than the consequences of speaking the truth.
Eva, you're a young old soul. That's what you are. You're a young old soul. You're a very old spirit, I think, in a very young, beautiful body.
Thank you.
And I feel this deep, deep, deep connection with you that I would guess that we have known each other from previous incarnations.
We're definitely, I mean, we connect on a higher level, and I think that's why we're friends, you know, even though we've never seen each other up until today. But that's a hopeful message for people as well. It's like, you're going to find such amazing people who have gone through the same things that you have gone through. You're not going to be completely alone. You know? Yeah, you might be one of the odd ones out, but you're in a fucking fun bunch with the odd ones out. You know, it's going to be a
party at the attraction Kudos. Says you will attract those who are similar to you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they will pop. They will just show themselves. And it's such a gift.
Yeah.
It's the biggest gift in the world to know all the beautiful souls and people that we meet along the way. Right.
I
feel so privileged with the pain and the suffering that we're experiencing. This is taking me back to the beginning of our conversation.
Yeah.
I just feel so privileged to know all those new, beautiful people that are coming to me and to you in our journeys.
Yes.
So
God bless you for your efforts, and all the best to you and your country.
I'm going to keep talking. I asked you before if you think I should shut up.
Oh, yeah. No. You've already, you know, that's the thing with, once you start speaking out, there is no way back unless you completely forsake everything that you stand for.
Sell and I yourself.
Know you have to sell yourself. And then even then, you know, even the people who backtrack are never completely trusted by the establishment anymore anyway.
Yes.
So it's like, might as well soldier on.
Exactly. I go all in.
I know you have no other choice. You asked me that question. I was like, woman, you ask me that, you
I'm
know, you know what the answer
maybe
is.
Maybe there's an easy way out, but I know there isn't.
No, I know you. There's no way back for you. You're just going to keep on going.
I know.
Like I
tried.
Said, God bless you for it. So,
thank you so much, dear.
Thank you. Thank you
this
for having
was
me.
A pleasure.
That was so fun.